You are a market leader operating in a highly competitive industry where efficiency and tangible results are paramount. You have a small and dedicated marketing team focused on executing regular marketing communications that must deliver immediate, measurable outcomes. You need a marketing partner that can seamlessly collaborate with your team, ensuring swift and frictionless execution, all while achieving quantifiable results in real time. My name is Tyler Chisholm, and as the co-founder and CEO of Clear Motive Marketing, we can help. With over 15 years of working with clients exactly like you from across North America, we have the team, the skills, and the processes to deliver the marketing that matters to you. Reach out to me on LinkedIn or check out clearmotive.ca to learn more. Hello and Alarm Collisions YYC. Welcome to my guest this morning, Mr. Mark Rada. How are you doing, Mark?
I am fabulous, Tyler. Thank you.
Oh, so good to have you on, man. We met at the Mesh Conference, actually, last fall, I think early December, through a mutual friend, Mr. Chris Hogg, actually said, hey, you guys need to chat. And it's how I meet all the best people in my life. It's funny, they always are introduced by other the best people in my life. So I put you in really good company there, my friend. And you do something that I found very curious. I got into this wild world of marketing through my passion for brand. And you are a brand economist. And that was a new tone. That was a new title for me and a new discipline. So I will make no attempt to describe it. Let us into the tent. What do you do? What's a brand economist? What gets you out of bed in the morning? And what blows your hair back?
Yeah. Thanks, Tyler. Amazing. Brand economist. Yeah, it's a bit of a loaded title, but it's really fun to kind of dive into it. Essentially, we are brand geeks. We are the numbers and the strategists, the finance, all kind of mashed together in one. I kind of joke with everyone, we're like NASA meets Harry Potter, where it's like the precision of NASA, and we're just magical like Harry Potter. You know, everyone loves Harry Potter.
I won't get into which character are you, and we'll save that for later in the show. Maybe we'll see if the audience can decide.
but at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is really answer this one question, which is, where does value come from? And we're trying to identify that within the organization, right? So when we talk about this notion of brand and brand economics, it's not about the visuals and the styling of the logo and things like that, but it's a deeper conversation at a C-suite or board level about, you know, if I had $1 to invest in the brand or in the business, where would I do that? Where would I invest it? And what kind of return would that look like? So it's really just a blend of, you know, economic value, ROI, market dynamics, customer behavior. There's, you know, a string you can pull on pricing, forecasting, performance tracking, like absolutely everything, and including positioning in the market, right? When we look at an organization, we can't silo it to just marketing or finance or ops or something like that. Mm-hmm. We have to look at the entire entity. And that's what we do with brand economics.
I love it. Oh, so many questions. Let's unpack the word value. Such a powerful word, like brand, can get thrown around really easy. I like you clarified, hey, we're not talking about the look, the feel, and necessarily the cosmetic side, which is because it can be important because it allows you to be recognized easily and with a meaning behind it. But when you say value, I think qual and I think quant. I think, okay, if this is what we want to stand for, these actions will add value to that, which can be very qualitative. But I'm also hearing the word economist, a little bit crystal ball of there's some hard numbers around there. So when you break apart value for a company, do you typically start with the hard numbers and what can drive a dollar creates $2? Or do you quickly get into like, okay, this activity will add value to who you're trying to be in the world, and therefore that will create a dollar? And I'll stop meandering my question all over the place.
Yeah, so we take the money ball approach, right? We try and figure out what is the outcome that we're trying to essentially money ball. So, and that outcome could be something quantitative or qualitative, right? And so let's just take, for example, you are you're selling used cars or cars in general, right? And so you might have an outcome, which is I want to sell a vehicle. Well, that's a great outcome. We now have to figure out what is the path to selling vehicles. So we need to figure out from that outcome, what are the behaviors that feed that outcome? And there's, you know, different levels of behaviors. Some behaviors are more valuable than others, right? Going and pricing out a vehicle and doing research and doing the online build is one thing. But, you know, what about test driving a vehicle, right? That's oftentimes a little bit more powerful. So we need to figure out, you know, what tier of behaviors feed that outcome. And then we go a step further back. Well, what are the perceptions that feed those behaviors, right? And perceptions could be, you know, value for money, trustworthy, You know, they understand my needs or a slew of other, you know, perceptions that are relevant to the industry.
Okay.
And it can't be just one. It could be a combination and then trace it back one more time. Now, what are the interactions that feed those perceptions? And so that could look very different. It could be quantitative, qualitative, but those interactions could be everything from, you know, what division? Is it a marketing thing? Is it a sales thing? Is it a production thing? Or it could be what channels are you in as well, right? And so based mm-hmm. on the business, that could change. Like if you are a hospital foundation, right? Your goal is donations, right? And so as a hospital foundation, you actually don't control a lot of the pathways to donations. The hospital does, right? So then understanding something soft and qualitative like patient satisfaction, right? And tracing back how do you get high patient satisfaction, you know, the behaviors, the perceptions, the interactions, what does great interactions and bedside manner look like, all of those things to achieve this quantitative goal of donations. Does that make sense?
It does. And absolutely, I appreciate you really gave the examples that really show how they blend together. Let's, again, all about establishing shared understanding. How would you define brand? We're in an elevator. You got a couple floors. Oh, you're a brand economist. Forget about the economist part. Like, define brand for me. Because, man, everything you just said, most people's minds went, whoa, that sounds like ops. That sounds like, what do you mean brand? That sounds like not brand to me. How would you define brand in simple terms?
Yeah, so I don't have a clean, neat definition of brand because I think businesses.
Mark, I had a lot of hope. I had a lot of hope with that question. I did.
So let me break it down into this notion of an ecosystem, right? I think brands are like ecosystems. If we look at the ecosystem of Earth, there's so many different things about Earth that we can see and things which are kind of not seen that fosters the ability for us to live and breathe and be very successful here on Earth. It could be the magnetic core of Earth, deflecting solar radiation, the ozone layer, and countless other things, the water cycle, things like that. Businesses or brands have the same thing. There's different layers, different things that we see that generate value, and the aggregate of which is brand. So here's an example. I think a lot of people approach brand from the definition of marketing and advertising and customer service. Yeah. Packaging, that type of thing. And that's not wrong. I think that's the typical, the small B definition of brand.
Okay.
I think we have to go further. I think we have to go further and look at some of the things which are internal to the organization, not really as visible externally. Things like, well, what's your sales and operations strategy? What's your HR, your culture? What about your intellectual property and your trade secrets? Finance plays a role, distribution, logistics. I mean, if we think about, you know, the Amazon marketplace brand, it's not its logo. No one cares if it went from a yellow logo, yellow smiley face to a blue. If you have a bad Amazon marketplace experience, I guarantee you it's probably with their logistics or distribution system or their platform, right?
So is it safe to draw a line to the customer experience and all that entails and everything you have that facilitates that? And I'm trying to oversimplify it, and that might be a bad journey.
You're absolutely right. It's that full brand experience.
Okay.
Bringing everyone together. No more these silos and fiefdoms, but how do we all work together to create such an amazing customer experience?
Because don't ever forget, your customer doesn't care about your internal politics. They just care about their experience. Yeah.
No, that's exactly
it. Oh, but Jane is mad at Frank, and Frank is mad at Bill, and I don't give a shit. I just want to know that my thing and my experience or my product or whatever it is arrives in the way and the manner in which I, back to the journey that I have, and you're hopefully making my life better or actualizing me in some way, as even B2B or B2C, that kind of doesn't matter.
That's exactly it. It doesn't matter, B2B or B2C.
Are we seeing, I feel if I look back at history, like brand kind of fell out of fashion a few years back. Oh, we're just going to put online, we're going to run some digital algorithms and that'll get customers and forget about brand messaging. We'll offer deals. I'm oversimplifying. Then brand, back to the marketing and sales team, seems to be coming back around. Customers are demanding more. Obviously, pandemic had an impact. What are you seeing in kind of the cycle and the maturity? Because companies love to go through, hey, we do this for a few years and that falls out of fashion and we do this. Is brand in the way that you're defining it here? I'm being optimistic even in this question. Is it on the rise? Are more companies going, okay, stop. We need to look RevOps, sales op, we're trying to look at more things under bigger umbrellas. Is that positively impacting this brand, the brand economist journey?
I think there is definitely a positive impact because I think everyone is a little bit more awakened in the market to understand that it's going to require more than just advertising itself, yeah. Right? Or just being in the digital mix itself. You know, we have a media mix, we have a marketing mix, we have a full brand mix that we got to actually look at. And so in that case, it's increasing. But I think there's also been a little bit of an erosion in the market where, you know, we keep changing the names of things. and so we went from...
We can often blame the marketing people for that, but that's another story. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's almost like we're shooting ourselves in the foot, right? When it comes to that, in terms of trying to build credibility. I think someone called it ballistic podiatry, right?
I've not heard that term, ballistic podiatry.
And it's interesting, you know, we went from brand to reputation, and we have a fight about, you know, is it one or is it the other? Is it both? Right. We've gone from comms to marketing. We've gone from, information to data. Like, who cares what the name is? Let's just, march down the road. The customer hasn't changed. Right. And we keep changing these things. Is it the CMO or is it the chief experience officer? All these other things. And so,
I'm not going to lie, it gets a bit silly sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, what new made up, like I'll meet someone, they'll tell me their title. And I'm like, I don't want to laugh, but I'm like, what is this made up thing that you've got? What the hell does that even mean?
Yeah. And
good intentions, good intentions. I'm not trying to undermine anybody, but sometimes it feels, you're right. It inhibits credibility because you look like you have ADD.
Yeah. And our tools have gotten better, but the customer's still saying, hey, stop looking at me. Right? It's still about me. And the CFO is saying, you still haven't proved it to me. Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You got all these tools, you know, and you end up being this, this human pinata, show me the money. And it's just a vicious cycle. So yeah, I think that things have improved in some ways, but you know, the more intelligent we get, the more, you know, that's a kind of, it's not that it's a bad thing, but
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're sitting at the table and you're sitting at the C-suite, who's your biggest, I'm just going to say it because we're not naming names here, but who's your biggest adversary? Is it the CFO? Like, hey, prove it to me. I've been asking to have someone prove it to me for years. You're not proving it to me. Like, where do you get the detractors? Because often those can be your biggest advocates once you do prove it to them. So I'm just curious what that journey looks like as you're engaging with, and we'll talk about different types of organizations, but when you walk in, who do you know right away that's probably going to be coming at you from the corner of the room?
Oh, CFO all the time, except... Yeah. That CFOs have turned to love us. And the reason is because, let's just face it, brand doesn't have a shared KPI in the organization, right? And so what we're trying to do is, you know, as like people in marketing, we have our own KPIs. It's isolated to our own little fiefdom. Everyone else outside of our fiefdom doesn't understand, you know, culture and things like that. Because if you ask the CFO, you know, where's the value of culture? Where's the value of, you know, human capital and all these other things? You know, they have some measures for it, but it's tenuous at best. Why? Because they've come up in a world where this language doesn't exist. And their only yardstick and tool they have is gap accounting. And gap accounting can't account for any of these things that we've just talked about, right? And so the CFO is always kind of looking at us with one eye crooked up, saying, you know what, like, prove it to me. But then when you start to actually bring everything back to, well, you know, let's bring it down to dollars and cents because you understand that and we'll put it in your way. How do we invest $1 and generate $3 out of it? Mm-hmm. And start creating KPIs and say, hey, marketing, this is how you lead on this. And, you know, customer care, this is how you support. Or maybe customer care, this is how you lead on it. And marketing, this is how you support. And we start to create cross-organizational KPIs that the CFO is going to start to say, you know what, maybe I don't understand 100%, but I understand it, you know, 70%, 60%, that's a win.
Right. And now I'm starting to see movement. I'm starting to see trends. I'm starting to see change that I've like, we were a three, now we're a five. What does that mean? And okay, it's moving in a good direction. Branding does not have shared KPIs across the organization. There should be. Is there, of course, the opportunity? Is there any that come to mind that tend to show up more? Because every organization is going to have a little bit of its own formula, I'm assuming. Is there some ones that you see typically, like, I got a CFO now, he's leaning in. We've kind of got his attention. He's or her attention. And they're very curious about what would be some of the shared KPIs that you see start to come up that are more or less consistent across different orgs?
KPIs across different orgs. I'd have to say it's very much organization specific, right? Which, and it's also, and I have to just put the qualifier that it's brand specific, right? Some of the drivers that drive BMW are not the same drivers that drive Mercedes-Benz, right? And so we got to account for that. But aspects are around, you know, obviously business transformation. We've seen some KPIs around that have come up. Integration has been a huge factor, especially because we live in a SaaSified world, right? and
Mark, you CFOs, got a lot of good ones, like SaaSified. I've not heard that before. Didn't heard the ballistic podiatry. Like, you got, dude, you're building my my references, words I'm going to use later today at cocktail parties.
Love it. But just really like aspects around like even retention and human capital are ubiquitous across all organizations, yeah, and extremely important, right? Because it's driving down costs. You know, a lot of CFOs are faced with the prospect of, you know, do I grow revenue or reduce costs? Well, you know, depending on your rate of return, it's easier just to reduce costs to generate the same kind of financial impact. So these are the kind of KPIs that we start to see.
But then in a situation like that, would you then be brought in or would have the opportunity to say, okay, you can reduce costs, but if you reduce it in these areas, you might see a KPI improvement in the short term, but you're actually going to potentially cause negative impact on reduced revenue in the long term. Like, would that be an example of a, like, sure, you can cut staff to reduce costs. It's like a restaurant reducing the quality of their food. Man, we got really profitable for about 2 months and then the restaurant was empty and we went out of business. There's lots of those stories because it's very one-to-one. Would that be a role? Would that be a seat where you would say, hey, yeah, okay, but let's make sure we're not reducing costs in areas where that when I extrapolate out will actually hurt you in the, you know, 6 to 12 month timeline or more.
Yeah. So two things. Number one, we put it in terms we put it in a language the CFO understands, right? And the language is, what is the value at risk? Right. And so we're saying that, hey, let's quantify the value at risk of a decision, whatever that decision might be. Reducing headcount or pivoting and repositioning in another way, and that would be it. But number two, I think the most important thing is we don't advocate for the reduction or the increase of anything. At first, let's have a conversation about the optimization of what you currently have. Right? And so can we better utilize the dollars in different ways to create a little bit better outcomes? If so, let's have that conversation first, because maybe we can offset some reductions that you might have on tap, and it might be just, you know, a non-starter, like a nothing burger to begin with.
Same dollars, better use. I like that a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
That also feels a lot safer, right? Oh, okay. We're going to keep the same pieces on the board. We're just going to rearrange them into different formats and change the whole potential experience or the outcome that we're getting. Does that pave the road a little bit easier for you to come in to an organization as the consultant, as the outsider? Oh, we're going to slash this or we're going to spend here. Easy for you to say, Mr. Consultant. I'm assuming this also opens up a little bit more, maybe opportunity, a little curiosity, more willingness on the other side. And now I'm getting into the psychology of bringing this type of value to an organization as the new guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that, you know, it starts to build credibility, and credibility isn't built, you know, right away, and it's earned over time, right? And so where we can start to define boundaries and what a win looks like, or, you know, we're able to manage expectations. If we hit those expectations, that credibility builds. Not just, by the way, not with us. You know, it's great for us to build credibility. What we want to do is for the internal team to build credibility, CMO and everyone else that's part of the organization. At the end of the day, we want to extract ourselves out, right?
If you do your job well, you're working yourself out of a job. That kind of joke.
Very much.
Who's your ICP? Who's your ideal customer profile? Even what companies are you seeing are very open to this? Maybe that's a better way to say it. Like, who's curious? Who's looking out? Who's Google searching for this kind of stuff right now in your sphere?
Got it. There's a few companies. Number one, we don't have a firmographic segmentation.
Okay.
We can't say that you have to have X amount of revenue and, you know, this mm-hmm. this much headcount or something like that. It's more of a psychographic profile, right? If you are a leader within a company or an aspiring leader within a company, and you just want more data, you're hungry, you're curious, you're a bit of a shit starter within the industry and in a very positive way,
yep.
right? Because you're looking to, you got to make your boss look good, right? And sometimes you're not looking at things which are best in class, but best out of class, right? And you're willing to have that conversation. Those are the people who really vibe with us because that's what we're looking at as well, right? Our yardstick is different. You know, I understand that a lot of organizations want to act different and think different and whatnot, but you know, the ones who are willing to also measure different are the right fit for us. And they're open to those conversations.
Willingness to measure different. I like that a lot. Are you seeing any consistency? I'll just keep trying to pin you down from different angles. In certain industries, like are certain industries like, oh shit, like we need to do things different because we're getting impacted, or hey, we're on fire and things are awesome. We've got some bandwidth, but let's do it better. Like, is there any type of, I appreciate it. I like the psychographic approach. We have a very similar, like it's not some universal, if you have the right mindset, you can be a good client at all different sizes. But if you don't, your revenue and your numbers actually really could trick you into thinking they're going to be a good client. Is there any sectors that you've seen more activity in the last, even last year?
Tech and healthcare. Tech, because, you know, I mean, it's a vicious world out there, right? and tech has enjoyed the benefits of, you know, liquidity and risk capital being like absolutely, like extremely cheap.
Wheelbarrows of money at very low cost. Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
exactly, right? And as risk capital evaporates in the market, we start to see that, hang on a second, you can't buy growth. You actually have to compete better. Right. And so, or compete smarter. And so we see tech as one of those players. Another one, healthcare, especially, and I want to qualify, not healthcare in Canada. Healthcare in Canada is a whole different other ballgame.
Okay.
In the US. And for transparency, we do a lot of work in Canada. We do even more in the US.
Okay.
But healthcare in the US, because let's face it, they spend the most amount on healthcare in the United States, and they've got the lowest life expectancy. They have the lowest life expectancy, but so the highest.
Speaking of KPIs, you're like, what's going on here?
yeah, exactly. So
and it's declining too. I think the life expectancy number is declining.
Yeah, but we also see a convergence between the two, and both realize that, right? We see the convergence between healthcare and technology. I mean, Amazon, never a competitor in the past. You know, if you asked, you know, CVS or Walgreens, you worried about Amazon? Oh no, you know, they sell stuff until Amazon goes and buys PillPack. And now Amazon has launched their insurance services as well. You know, coming at absolutely everyone. And then we've got AI, and then we've got computing power, all these other things. These are like two massive worlds colliding. And so, and then you factor in all these like macroeconomic factors into it. You got to compete smarter.
Do you have any, you know, my audience ranges from large kind of Fortune 500 CEOs all the way down to like startup founders and five people and just got their first check. Is there a bit of a playbook or a, you know, checklist that you might put forward of like, hey, no matter how big you are, how small you are, or what, if you've got the right psychographic profile, these are the things that I would say from Mark's perspective, you can start thinking about no matter where you are in your journey around building an organization that delivers something of value to a customer, just to try to make it as broad and as concise as possible. Is there any kind of ranking or just thoughts, even not in order, that you would start to say, hey, get these on your radar. No matter where you are on your journey, these are important to be thought about.
Got it. Yeah, I think there's two things. Number one is we have to just educate ourselves and acknowledge or bring to the forefront the fact that our worlds have changed, right? Today, intangibles are the new raw materials that build brands. You know, back in the day, we used to rely on, you know, property, plant, and equipment, and all of those things are fabulous and important. But today, we've got things like patents and data, reputation, networks, relationships, all these things, which are the new ingredients that are driving organizational value today. And while that's interesting and we understand it, you know, I don't think people truly appreciate the value of that, right? Yeah, and how value is derived. I mean, a great example, we look at United Airlines, market cap of United Airlines, somewhere around $10 billion. The value of their loyalty program, almost $22 billion, right? So when you start to ask the question, where does value come from? Well, you know, that should answer it for you.
Do you find, curious, just to interrupt you for a second. It's like, we joke at Clearmoto for you. You can't see the label when you're inside the bottle. And I've worked with a lot of coaches. They're like, so many companies don't truly understand their own core competencies because they're too close to it. They just assume that's the way everyone does it. They just assume that's the way it's supposed to be. That might be an oversimplification, but is that also part of sometimes we are so close to our own secret sauce that we actually don't understand what adds value because we live it and breathe it every day. And we're just sometimes blind to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was like you can't see the forest through the trees.
I guess there's a million metaphors that support that whole theory, right?
But that's exactly it, you know. And then we get into this echo chamber of management preference where, you know, we just kind of echo what each other is saying. No one's actually going out to the market to get that sense check, right? Which kind of brings me to my second point for the question you asked was, oh my God, do research, right? Get out there and like do a little bit of research. If you've got a dollar to spend, you know that question I asked at the beginning? If I had $1 to spend, where would I invest it? Well, why not just take 10 cents of that dollar to optimize your spend on the front end so that the remaining 90 cents is gonna yield far more than that dollar versus taking that 10 cents afterwards. It's not even 10 cents afterwards, it's like 2 cents afterwards. Trying to figure out, oh, did this work or didn't work?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's akin to building the house and then trying to figure out, did you do the foundation right? Did you survey properly and all those things? No, spend the time in advance. You don't have to boil the ocean on it, but you know, get the insights before, have that sense check before, have that management preference conversation in advance and then build.
Do you find even in today when you like do your research is almost a cliche, companies still want to skip that step with some illusion of speed or some illusion of we already have it figured out? I run into it all the time. So I'm curious if I'm not alone on that one.
Always. Yeah, Everyone seems to think that they know better than the market, right? When their job is to just exclusively
arrogance and ignorance are a dangerous thing and a little bit of ego and success. And man, we do silly things enthusiastically all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is best encapsulated in the saying, by the way, we all acknowledge that change is a thing, but if the pace of change outside of your organization exceeds the pace of change within your organization, the end is near. And that could be your perspective on the customer, you know, the product, value proposition, whatever that may be, right? If you're not taking the time to actually explore externally, you've got a big problem. You actually have systemic risk built into the company. And, you know, hopefully the board is flagging that.
Mm. Oh, Mark, these are so good. You get talking points for days, my friend. I love it. All right. Is there a number three? We got to number two. I'm taking detailed notes here on my side.
Is there a number three? It's that, you know, positioning matters. And so you have to actually map out who your stakeholders are and understand that you need to have a value proposition and position for that. And it matters if you're a large cap company, you know, trying to manage it through investor relations or whatever that may be. Or you could be a growth company looking to get your seed round or something else like that. But understanding how you're going to position to investors, so important. Don't skip on that. And positioning changes over time. Some things which are differentiators today might be table stakes tomorrow. We have to be willing and open to explore that and adjust to that. That's all.
Would it be oversimplifying? Am I oversimplifying to say like what you just said? You know, the unique quantifier today becomes table stakes tomorrow. That's just happening at a faster pace, no matter what industry you're in.
Absolutely.
Back to the speed and change together.
Yeah, it's contextual. I mean, like if we rewind into 2007, 2008, when banks were going through, you know, the subprime mortgage crisis, you know, you always intrinsically trusted that your bank was trustworthy. Right? Trustworthy wasn't a thing, and then we had to reposition, right, for at least a few years on this notion of trustworthiness for banks.
It takes a lifetime to build and a minute to destroy trust.
Yeah, but it's now no longer a differentiator anymore, right? Yeah, it's back down to table stakes. Right. So things will oscillate, like the world oscillates, stock markets oscillate, you know, nothing remains still. And yet we, for some sick reason in business, seem to think that, you know, we've got it right. We don't need to change.
And the things that will destroy us are the ones we'll never have it, that we have no chance of predicting. Subprime, COVID, whatever. pick the thing, right? pick the when the black swans are coming more often, it's not as much of a novelty item. I'll let you continue. If there's a number four, cool. If not, I might have another question. Okay, all right, I love it. Rule threes. So for all the marketers, brand marketers, performance marketers, whatever, however you want to bolt that together, that have hung on and like, okay, we're talking about brand. Where do they fit into the mix? And it feels like so many more people need to get on this table from the brand economist perspective. But if I'm a marketer myself, and I've been a marketer for years, and I'm going, yeah, Mark, I hear you. I just haven't been able to get this play. Talk to me, like, what would you say to that crowd, to my people? What would you say to my people, Mark?
I'd have to say two things. You gotta find a way to understand and empathize your internal stakeholders as much as you do, or in the same way as you do with your external. Right. So you gotta understand that, right? That's an important part of building credibility and trust within the organization. So that when you ask that budgetary increase, you might not get 100% of it. You might get 50, 60, whatever that percentage is. And number two is that, you know, we acknowledge that we live in a kind of a cross-functional world, right? So it's not just about advertising and marketing, but it's about data and analytics and things like that. But one huge gap is finance, right? You have to understand the world of finance as well. So my recommendation is it might be dry, it might suck, but you got to go and learn it. Why? Because you got to speak to it within the organization.
Well, and it can be, if done well, the keys to your next opportunity and the next cool thing or impactful thing you want to do in the organization that all of a sudden now goes, oh, yeah, you proved it to us last time. Absolutely. Let's give you some runway to go do, sometimes try and test and learn these new ideas. Is this also why we're seeing more CRO, CSO, some of those that tend to like, okay, we need to put more things underneath these umbrellas because these silos didn't work for us. We need to get them closer together. Is this us as just the evolution of the way we structure organizations? Do you see some of those roles, which I know have been table stakes maybe in the US for years, still seems a little slow in Canada, depending on who I talk to. Does that tie into kind of this idea we're talking about, kind of we got to get more of this together and stop with this separate, you do this, I do that kind of mindset?
Absolutely, because there's a gap in the, you know, the CMO's skill set. And then we say, hey, we need to add in another role, right? And so we got to shore it up in this way. That's actually not the solution. We need to actually ensure that our CMOs are better equipped, and everyone within the organization, what's within that that function, is better equipped. I'm shocked that more CMOs don't have a finance geek on their team, right? They've got a data geek on their team nowadays, right? Or analytics is a separate thing, and they got to go, you know, hunt someone down on that side. But like, we need just to build this out in a little bit better way, and not build out more and more titles, which, you know, people don't understand what their roles are, what their impact is, who they report to, KPIs, all that stuff doesn't exist. And I think this is born out of a fear as well, or even a recognition that, you know, the average guinea pig has a longer lifespan than the tenure of a CMO, right? Which is
I'm glad you worked that in. I was going to mention that about the shortest tenure, you know, the CMO and the CMO, CTO fighting for who's going to get whose parking spot when the other one gets fired, right?
let's take a step back and look at that. You know, what does the CMO have that everyone else does not? I mean, we don't see CMOs in the boardroom, number one, right? They don't have a place on the board, and they rarely speak with the board, even though they're the voice of the customer. We also see CMOs have the least amount of KPIs, shared KPIs, and validated KPIs within the organization. The CTO has one, the CFO has one, absolutely everyone else in the organization has one. And all of them can be linked to productivity in some way, in almost an indisputable way. So when a CTO says, I need another 10 million for this or X number for that, they're like, oh yeah, take it. You need more? Here's more, right? But not the CMO. So yeah, we need to shore it up.
Do you see a new breed of CMO coming out of this? Like, you're calling it out as like, this is obvious, this is clear, this is a problem that needs solving. You and I fast forward 10 years from now, and we circle back for a follow-up episode. Do you say, wow, I've seen a whole new breed coming out of the school system, coming out of the executive world of like, wow, they realized they had to get skilled up in these areas? Or are we still a ways off that? What are your thoughts? This is a crystal ball question, I'm aware.
I am hopeful, and I'm kind of living it out today. I'm also a professor And so what I do is,
oh, fabulous.
In my classes, I'm blending all of it together. I'm saying, you know, this is how this is relevant at the, you know, CMO level. If we're talking about advertising, this is how it's relevant to other verticals as well. And this is how you can create these shared KPIs, right? So I'm kind of injecting it already. And I'm just like a one-man army at the moment. I'm sure other professors out there are doing the same thing. I'd love to meet them. Please reach out to me. And if you're not, and you still and you want to do it, reach out to me. But I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. I think there's a realization in the world today that we, on some level, need to be a jack of some trades. Maybe not all trades, but some trades.
Well, just looking at your courses, strategic management, strategic analysis, management decision-making, retail marketing, international sales and marketing. It's eclectic, but listen to you talk, I can see the thread kind of pull through all that, right? Especially after this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all linked. I mean, at the end of the day, I want to go back to that ecosystem comment I made. These are just ecosystems, right? We're just talking about different aspects of ecosystems. We've got to understand that, right? So that we understand like how to operate and how to best maximize value at the end of the day.
Thinking about that future workforce, who's in that room when you're teaching those classes? Marketers, MBA students, like who's showing up for these classes? And is it part of a curriculum or are they just choosing it because it's of interest to where they see their careers going?
Yeah, most of the classes I teach are final year courses. And so I've got students who are from an accounting background, from a management background, some marketing and HR backgrounds as well. And what's interesting are the students who are coming in not from business at all, who actually seem to be a little bit further ahead because they lived in like, say, a healthcare world or something like that. And they're like, oh, I see how this works. I see how this ties versus some of the, especially like the accounting students who are very much, you know, they've got these blinders on. They live and die with GAAP accounting. You know, it's really hard to absorb, but you know, it's changing. I see everyone at the end of the semester having come a long way and they understand it, they can articulate it better. So it's good.
Is there anything like just the people in healthcare used as an example of like the patient, the human is still at the center of so much of that? Where I got into accounting because I didn't want to deal with people. I'm paraphrasing friends that have like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with that. That's why I get into the numbers. They're so much safer. I feel more comfortable there. But what I'm hearing you say, this is all about that customer experience and how it all ties together from front to back and then around again, hopefully. And you know, the infinity loop that just keeps going and the customer stays there. I could see it be a challenge when I'm an individual who went, I chose this field because I didn't want to think about people. I didn't want to interact with people, which I'm being a bit, you know, broad sweeping. But that customer being at the center of your day, I feel that it'll push you closer to this just by nature and not even realizing you are.
Yeah, I mean, even okay, so let's take it as from a concrete example. An accountant, you know, you're right, they might go into it because they want to kind of avoid the customer. but you know, imagine you're building out your financial statements and you've got a line on there for some of the intellectual property that you have, right? The patents and whatnot, right? And so you got to value the patents on your balance sheet. Let's just say that you're Apple, and you start to realize that, hang on a second, the revenue derived is, you know, far exceeds the value of the patent or the recorded value of the patent on the balance sheet. If you want to try and reconcile any of that or understand how that, you know, effect works, the Moorbound effect works, you got to understand that part of that is loyalty, part of that is price premium. You know, all of these things factor in, and if you want to reconcile the two, it's reconciled from the customer's perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Not from GAAP accounting's perspective. So if you want to start to license that that piece of like that patent for the patent portfolio, you want to, you know, CRA's coming after you because of, you know, a brand charge. You've got one entity here, one entity there, you got a brand charge going. Well, guess what? You know, the validation for the brand charge is a customer-based validation. That's what
I'm sensing, Mark. I'm picking up the theme. I'm picking up the theme as we pull. That was a great example of like, I've got an item on a balance sheet, but the revenue or the what's happening is outsized compared to what I thought that value was. Where do I go to figure out what's going on? I got to go to the customer interaction. I got to go to the value creation. I love it. How does someone engage with you? Do they sit down and just have a good chat and do you do an audit? Like what's kind of first, like you know, I'm always thinking about somebody who's like me, who's on this going, okay, cool. What's next? What do I do? How do I go from here? How do I get more learned and more engaged with this concept?
First of all, flash that logo right into the clouds and I will see it.
Oh, nice. Okay. I love it. Yeah.
But no, I mean, you can always reach me on LinkedIn. I'm there, but honestly, like everyone's always asked me, you know, how do you get into this field? And it's really hard to describe. I'm just a geek's geek here. I love, you know, learning about, you know, research around, you know, the customer. I'm a finance geek. That's actually where my degree is, right? In modern portfolio theory, options pricing, things like that. Right. But I love brand. I love marketing. I love, you know, these amazing business, you know, ecosystems and things that organizations have created. But the reality is there's only one way to do it, just to speak to a variety of different people and to read absolutely everything. And more importantly, to speak about it. Right. Because at the end of the day, it's just constellations. Like, you know, you might read an article here or an article there and it's just a point of data. But finding a way to connect the two, now we've created constellations. If you've created constellations, now we can navigate the seas, right? There's, you know, we can open up other sources of value. And so that's the way that I've gone about this, right? Stitching this all together.
I love it. So interesting. When we first met, I was like, I am so curious about what you're up to, what you're doing and how it contributes and how it all ties into this very often amorphous word that we call brand that gets thrown around so frequently and incredibly loosely. Loosely, is that correct? So, okay, bonus question at the end. You made the reference early to Harry Potter. So if we were going to put the sorting hat on, my wife loves Harry Potter, so I've by default watched it many times. Where do you fall? Is it Gryffindor? Is it Slytherin? Like, you know, I'm putting you on the spot here, but you did make the Harry Potter reference at the beginning.
You know what? I think probably Gryffindor. Definitely, nice. Definitely Gryffindor. Yeah, for no good reason. I've got zero good reason why I would be in there. I think it's, but other because Harry was in there, and Harry's gangster.
I've got something up on my screen, which yeah. You know, Gryffindor is daring, Slytherin is ambition, Hufflepuff is loyalty, and Ravenclaw is curiosity. I had never heard them explained that way. So Google's given me that. So I was like, oh, because like, before I ask the question, I better have my stuff together on my side so I know what I'm asking.
so maybe I would be. What was the last one you said?
Ravenclaw is curiosity.
Maybe I would be Ravenclaw.
I would be there as well because curiosity is my thing. I love it. I'm like, I wouldn't have picked that. It's because I've never seen it defined that way. So for the Harry Potter geeks, they'll be all laughing at us right now. But if you're listening 50 minutes in, it's because you enjoy the chat. So you're like, oh, okay, what are these guys going to talk about now? Mark, that was a fantastic conversation. I appreciate the clarity. I love the way you laid it out. You gave us the point one, point two, point three on multiple fronts, which makes it so much easier for the audience to go, oh, okay, number two. Yeah, I like that. And I love the journey that you're on, and you and I will be chatting again. I'm gonna boldly throw that in whatever context. But really enjoyed
it.
So, LinkedIn is a preferred platform for you. I heard you loud and clear. Strata Insights.
Yes.
Is Strata Insights is your company, correct?
It is.
Excellent. And should we go? Is your you got a website out there too? I'm assuming we might want to go check.
Yes, StrataInsights.com.
Lovely. We'll put all that in there, but I love to just be really, I am a sales and marketing guy. So let's tell the world, first rule, make it easy to get to let them find you. Step one.
That's right.
Measure, model, maximize brand experience, ROI. Love what you do, Mark. Really, really impressed. You gave me lots of think about today and some good fuel for my thoughts for the rest of the weekend. So my friend, thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.